The following is an evening darshan given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on April 24, 1982 in New Orleans, Louisiana.
Just like everyone likes the Mardi Gras. Of course, you sound so degraded, people just get, you know, and it's another thing. Hawaii, they have the big parades. Hawaii, they won the prize for that. Krishna consciousness is so beautiful. It has so much colorful festivities and colorful expressions, art forms, that in this way, even the more material able to appreciate those artistic art forms, if nothing else, on the basis of art, culture. And then gradually, because everything in Krishna consciousness is all centered around Krishna, they become more and more purified. So Krishna consciousness is a continuous adventure. In our preaching, we go out and meet people. Everything connected with Krishna, if one is actually connected with Krishna, then it's always an adventure at every moment. It's always new. One name for Krishna is Navayovana. Always new form, always new activities, always new qualities he's manifesting. In the material world, we have something, we're always looking for something new. You go in the grocery store, they always say new. Right? Everyone wants to get something new. But then after a little while, the novelty wears off. Why the novelty doesn't wear off in Krishna if we actually, once we get in touch with Krishna consciousness, on any level, in reality, Krishna is always new. He's new at every moment. The gopis, great devotees of Krishna, they never became tired looking at Krishna. In fact, they were cursing the creator, Lord Brahma, for creating eyes that were so defective that they had eyelids that blinked. Because that blinking would stop them from seeing Krishna momentarily. Second, you know, that moment when they couldn't see Krishna because of their blinking, they were cursing that moment. That's how much their appetite was for seeing Krishna. So Krishna's qualities is always new. That's how we can go on chanting and chanting, and there's always a new taste, always a new experience. I remember when I first joined Krishna consciousness, at that time Srila Prabhupada was in Montreal. He didn't have a visa for America. I was up there. So there was an emergency period. We didn't have Sankirtan. We didn't have other means of collection. Although I had jobs in America and other things, but when I went there, I actually didn't have any connection. So we just had to, by any means, get money. So we all tried to get jobs. We went out to manpower. We went out just to get any kind of job we could. So the only job I could find was sweeping the floor in an A&W coffee shop from 5 o'clock until 10 o'clock at night, something like that, afternoon shift. They asked Prabhupada whether that was all right because they served hamburgers there. He said, well, does he have to serve the hamburgers out? They explained that all he has to do is clean up after they've eaten them. So he said, well, from the person that grows the cow and sells it, to the person that ships it, to the person that butchers it, the person that cooks it up serves it, then the person that eats it, there's karma. But once it's already eaten, then this karma's already gone. Of course, it was a very, you know, terrible job, very menial, hellish kind of a condition. But every morning I was hearing Prabhupada's class. I come back and hear his evening class on the tape. I would see Prabhupada in the morning, give him a rose. Sometimes I'd stand guard outside of his room. Then I go into this hellish condition at night, but I'd be completely absorbed in serving my spiritual master and chanting Hare Krishna. So I'd be mopping the floor and I'd be chanting Hare Krishna and I'd be smiling. And if somebody would come in there with a hangover, take a cup of coffee, he'd look up and say, here's a guy, he's maybe got a big wad of money. He thinks, here's this bum, you know, guy sweeping the floor. guy's less, you know, singing and he's happy. And sometimes people would get angry at me. They say, "Why are you happy? Don't you realize, you know, like you're a bum, you know, you're a lousy job, you know. What do you got to be happy about? I got money, I got a job, I got this, I got that, but I got a car, you know, but I'm not happy. So why are you happy?" You know, then I tried to tell them, they really questioned it, couldn't relate to it at all. Remember that the owner of the shop, he became so angry because during coffee break I'd sit and chant japa. And he told me, "What are you doing? This is my coffee break. What are you doing?" "I'm chanting the names of God." "You can't do this in my establishment!" He just started yelling and swearing at me. "You can't, we don't allow this stuff here." I said, "Well, the other people drink their coffee, that's their intoxication. This is my break, you know." The guy was such a demon, he couldn't tolerate it. So for Janmashtami, he wouldn't give me a day off. I couldn't come. So then he fired me. Then I got a job in a printing press. So many other jobs they got. Just trying to pay for all those rent at that time. Now it's nice. We have book distribution. You have so many sankirtans. You don't have to work for these karmis. Very difficult when you have to work under karmis. But the point was that I could see so many people and they're just so miserable. And they couldn't understand that why a person would be happy, no matter what condition he's in. And in Krishna consciousness, when is Krishna conscious? Just chanting Hare Krishna. Doesn't matter externally what situations one in. One can actually be always happy. One can always be transcendentally situated. And every day, since that time and up to today, is always a new festival, always a new experience. Everything in the association and the service of Krishna. When we go preaching in the villages, you always meet, or in the cities, wherever it is, you always meet so many people. Different questions, different amount of interest. It's amazing how many people, like, I was flying from Geneva to Zurich, and right next to me, a man pulls out a letter from his daughter, happens to be in Nepal. He's a director of the Piper, the company that owns, the big conglomerate that owns the Piper Cub airplane company. Multi-millionaire. And he's reading this letter from his daughter's. I saw the letterhead was in Sanskrit. And then he starts talking, he gives me his cards, says, "Come by next time you're in Geneva." "Come by, stop by and see him." So like that, you meet all, Krishna always brings one to different people. How many times I've sat next to people that know about Krishna consciousness, that have become, you just see that Krishna is always arranging to bring people together. So in this way, there's unlimited scope for helping people just by working as Krishna's agent. People are always looking for something new. But in this material world, that newness is just very superficial. But in spiritual life, the newness is so internal and so real because it's in connection with Krishna. But actually, at every moment, there's expanding service, expanding consciousness, expanding freshness in one's service. Of course, especially one can appreciate if one gets up to the level of ruchi, or having a taste for devotional service. In the beginning, one has to become free from the contamination of bad habits, of materialistic attachments. That's called anartha nivritti. Anarthas are different contaminations that are in the heart. These contaminations are cleansed away by chanting, by serving. It's natural that we be attached to Krishna, we be attached to Krishna's devotees. But in material life, we don't have that association. So because we don't have the association, in the initial stage, our attachment is spread over so many things. We're attached to, you know, we were attached to maybe being number one in our class or getting an athletic letter or so many different things, having different kind of friends and different kind of social environments and all this kind of a family or friendship, love, different types of attachments are in the heart. And these things offer us an immediate offer of happiness, but then subsequently, they always give us misery. The Buddhists, they experience this misery, so they say that renounce everything, just achieve nirvana. They go between bhoga tyaga, enjoying and renunciation cycle. The Buddhist monk system is that you can be a Buddhist monk for 3 days, 3 weeks, 3 years, or 30 years. When you're a monk, you have to follow all the renunciation, all the strict thing. But then, at any moment, you can take off your robe and put on a karmi dress and become a layman again. So what they do is they'll sometimes be an ordinary person and get in the center, then for 3 months they'll become a monk, then they'll become agitated, again become an ordinary, For them, it's not considered blooping. And whatever you do in tyaga, they consider, well, that's a little bit better for you. And some of them stick to it. But Krishna kind of not dislike that, that we want to renounce. There's actually, the Buddhists understand that material life offers happiness, but then ultimately ends in suffering, so then they want to renounce. But then they don't have any positive spiritual understanding, no spiritual realization. It's just renunciation, just be free from the misery that they got when their enjoyment became frustrated. Like in America, people just become alcoholics or mental cases or something. Just like, what was it, Marilyn Monroe committed suicide, hung herself or something, took sleeping pills. So many people like that, they reach some kind of material prosperity, fame, prestige, but they're frustrated in so many ways that then they don't know where else to go. At least the Buddhist, he would then shave his head and become a monk or a nun. So they just take sleeping pills and kill themselves. But Krishna consciousness is neither of these. Krishna consciousness means there's a positive alternative. We actually understand our real spiritual happiness, our spiritual relation with Krishna. And in that we get positive experience of, Nitya Mahotsav, a daily festival every day. So initially we have these attachments, but our attachment to Krishna is actually the underlying factor. Our attachment to other things is actually a perverted type of attachment to Krishna. What we're looking for in all these other things is actually Krishna. That's why when we think that a thing is, when we get it, it's never up to our expectation. What we're actually expecting is Krishna. What we're actually wanting is Krishna. But we don't have the words or the concepts or the understanding to know that. We just know that whenever we get the thing that we wanted, it wasn't enough, it wasn't really what we wanted. There's something more. There's something missing. We go on looking, what is that? Actually, what we're looking for is Krishna. Because Krishna is complete. Krishna is at everything. He's the ultimate satisfaction of all of our desires. Krishna, the word na comes from ananda. It means the reservoir of all pleasure. Krishna means all attractive. What we're always being attracted to in different people is actually just part of Krishna. So initially, we have all these superficial attachments. We have these superficial attachments. Therefore, our consciousness is displayed over so many desires. So these are called anarthas. These are unwanted. They agitate our mind. They disturb us. So we chant Hare Krishna. We serve. We surrender to the spiritual master. And these anarthas are cleared away. When they're cleared away, then we become fixed in devotional service. And from the fixed platform, we could develop a taste, an actual nectarine taste of devotional service. Some people may immediately get some taste, even in the beginning stage, just because Lord Chaitanya is so merciful. But when one gets up to the stage of ruchi, or full taste, at that time the anarthas are cleared away. One no longer has strong attachment to these material distractions. And one is steady in the devotional service. The mind is not agitating in so many ways, and one develops a taste, and that taste is natural. It's not that we're imposing or teaching ourselves something. We already have a taste, we're already desiring Krishna, but we've diverted that in so many ways. So the attachment is already there, it's just been misdirected. So when we cleanse away the reactions of all the karma, good and bad, automatically our attachment to Krishna becomes established. It is already there in the heart. It's just been covered up by so much dirt, like a mirror covered with dust. We wipe the dust off. Then we can see things as they are. So therefore, we encourage people to chant Hare Krishna, and especially when chants follows regular principles, then the cleansing process is very fast. If one chants but still breaks regular principles, it's described as hatisna or gajasna. The elephant, if you've ever seen the elephant, they go in the water and they scrub themselves so good. Sometimes the bull elephant will scrub all the cow elephants, and they'll be very, you know, get very clean. Then they'll climb up on the shore, and they'll take the trunk and they'll take it in the dust, and they'll take a big scoop of dust and they'll throw it all over themselves. So, I mean, they just took a big bath and they go out, and the first thing they do is throw dust all over themselves. So that's called like a hatisnan. We tell that to Indians a lot of times. You come and chant, you do these 24-hour sankirtans, but after it's over, sometimes you light up a cigarette. So this is hatisnan. You're purifying your heart, you're chanting, but then you're not concentrating on avoiding these bad habits. So you're taking your bath and you're throwing the dirt on yourself again. So we try and encourage them to be a little more austere so they can get rid of these attachments. Once you get rid of your material attachments, simultaneously, it's like a progression. There's 8 levels. As you're more attached to material life, then you're less attached to Krishna. Automatically, as your Krishna attachment increases, your material attachment decreases. Finally, when you get up to bhava, you only have 1% attachment to the material world, and 99% attachment to Krishna. And then when you finally reach prema, and there's no attachment to the material world at all. That's considered to be a completely liberated state. Even bhava is 99% liberated state. So this is the basic process. If we want to engage the people in the festivities of Krishna consciousness, even if they say, this is very nice, oh, this is a nice thing, even if they appreciate like that, immediately they get so much benefit. You'll find in the Bhagavatam that it says that if a person appreciates what someone does, if a person supports, approves, he also gets the same result as the person doing it. So even if people see the Hare Krishna party, some people, just like we last time we went here for the Rath Yatra at Brebant Street, we're giving out books, and somebody said, you know, these people are always smiling, the Hare Krishna. One man in a bookstore, he's mentioned to one of the devotees. So just that approval, immediately he gets so much pais, so much sukriti for that. Of course, the quantity, he'll get the same, in other words, he'll get the same spiritual benefit just by approving. But according to his approval or his involvement, the quantity will be different than a devotee. If he gives $10, he gives 10 cents, or just gives a good word. Depending on how much that is for him proportionately, then still he'll get a benefit from that. So in this way, people who appreciate Krishna consciousness, they benefit more and more. Some of those people who criticize or try to stop it, then of course they're pulled down, unless they get a special mercy of some devotee. But basically this is very simple process. At the same time, because the philosophy contains everything, so many people, they can't immediately understand everything. But just that they can understand that they should chant Hare Krishna, and they should try to understand the Bhagavad Gita, then those who are more intelligent, those who are more philosophically inclined, more fortunate, by their being Krishna conscious, that will affect so many other people. The Prabhupada said that 0.1% of the people, they become Krishna conscious. The whole society will be completely changed. Questions? Now's your time.
What's the name of the book again?
Mahabharata.
Sorry, but at what stage does one enter into the relationship with Krishna personally?
Prema? At Baba, there's some exchange sometimes.
When he reaches prayer, then he comes to this constitutional.
Prema means you can't reach prema until you actually see Krishna. Bhava, you may not see Krishna, but you're absorbed in ecstasy and serving Him, and sometimes Krishna may appear momentarily. When He appears just momentarily, then at that point, prema can come. Prema means you've actually seen Krishna. And then after you see Krishna, you've seen Krishna. But bhava, sometimes a devotee in bhava chanting smells Krishna's bodily aroma. Or sometimes Krishna, when I touch the devotee, make him mad and makes us sick. Sometimes just in the thought of Krishna, there's
the whole point is one begin to follow footsteps and breath in the body. What point is advancement is one following footsteps on the resident, a particular resident of the body.
Basically from the bhava stage. That's why the people that are still having anarthas or bad habits, or they're just kanishta adhikaris, and then they try to imitate and immediately try to follow the system of becoming under the shelter of one of these associates. It's all artificial. Till one comes up to the platform, then how can... until one's attachment for material society, friendship and love is transcendent, how can one actually experience what is eternal relationship is with Krishna? It will start to manifest. It can start to manifest at bhava stage, but when one is actually in prema, then it's really revealed, realized, so to say.
You mentioned the nine forms of material nature. What are they? What are the functions or attributes?
No, these are just different. She appears in different places, in different forms. She, it's a personal form. Not her form, just as the energy, but she a personal form. She was Sati, it's in the Bhagavatam, and then her father criticized her husband, Lord Shiva. So then she felt that her body was contaminated because her father, who gave her the body, was an offender. So when she couldn't convince her father to take back his offensive statements, and she sat in yogic meditation, and in the anger that she had taken birth from such a father who had been an offender of pure devotee of Krishna, her husband, she burned herself up in yogic mystic power, fire, and destroyed her body. And that's what got Lord Shiva so angry, that he sent his Virbhadra to the arena, and they killed his father-in-law. Made a complete destruction of the whole place. Then she took birth again as Parvati, the daughter of the Himalayas. Every time she takes birth, she marries Lord Shiva again. But then sometimes she leaves her body and then takes birth again. One of the forms of is called Kamaksha. And it's also in the Mahabharata. And she directs the daughter of Nakashasura to surrender to Krishna. Like this, material nature, also one name is Bhakti Pradayini. She gives devotion to Krishna. She can also give devotion to Krishna if someone wants it. But she tests whether someone wants it. And when she tests them, if they fail the test, then she doesn't give it to them. Under certain circumstances, she also, if one prays to her, to be released from serving material nature and being allowed to serve Krishna, she can also give that benediction as a devotee. And to some of her devotees, she actually directed them to Krishna. But mostly people worship her in India just for material. She's mainly worshipped to get a good wife and to have material opulence. The prayer they make to Durga is Dhanam Deya, Pratista Deya, Sriyam Deya, Pujam Deya, like that. Deya means give me. Give me money, Dhanam. Give me money. Dhanam Deya, Patista, they give me position. Sriyam Deya, give me beauty. Pujam Deya, give me followers and worship. You know, just
the exact opposite of what Lord Chaitanya was praying for.
No, it's materialistic. It's worship the demigods. It says in the Bhagavad Gita, those who worship the demigods, who are bewildered by the flowing words of the Vedas, they're attracted to so many material benedictions and they're driven by lust. So therefore, the devotees, they don't worship the demigods independent of Krishna, because all they can give is some material benediction. They worship the devotees, the demigods as devotees. We don't disrespect demigods. We go in the temple, we bow down to the temple with our right side. Right side is for devotees, left side is for Krishna, and straight on is for the Guru. This is the system. So we worship them with our right side, because they're also bowing down to Krishna. And we don't ask any material benediction from them. We depend on Krishna. But here you don't have that problem. There's no demigod temple, but in India. We're supposed to respect them as great devotees. One time we were on the boat preaching up the Ganges, and then one of the devotees started criticizing Kali. He went by a Kali temple. And it just as soon as he said a very offensive statement to the Mother Kali, then out of the clear blue sky, a sudden wind came up and blew the boat right into the water. Huge, it's like a 40-foot mast, blew it right over into the water. Water is pouring into the ship. Devotees falling off into the water, boats going down just immediately. Then the captain had to cut the sail with a rope right from the mast, and then the boat went back up. Devotee paid his obeisances. So although we don't worship them, we don't also want to get into any criticism. I mean, there are devotees, but they have some material desire in most cases. Some of them are powerful energies which are just doing Krishna's service. So she's the material energy. Her job is to keep you in illusion. Those souls who want to forget Krishna, she's the energy that makes one forget Krishna. Otherwise, it's not natural for you to forget Krishna. So Krishna has an energy. If you want to forget Krishna, then he has provided an energy to do that, to put you in illusion. So we want to avoid serving illusion. So in a sense, we're declaring war on her. But everything's fair in this war, so sometimes even one prays it. You're very powerful, so for me, you can just leave up. You can give me some penalty points. Any other questions?
In India, which temple do you consider architecturally greatest of all? Is there any outstanding temples outside?
So many. Different styles, different. I serve the Eskar architectural minister. So many nice temples. Jagannath Puri temple is very nice. I think I like the Jagannath Puri temple. There's some very nice temples in Vrindavan also. But some of the bigger ones are broken by the Mohammedans. Something about the Jagannath Puri temple, when you're coming up to it, you can see it from about 10 miles away. I will stop the car and pay my obeisances right there on the side of the road. It has such a presence to it. Prabhupada told us to build a bigger temple than the Jagannath Puri temple in Jagannath Puri. He said when we do that, then Jagannath will leave that temple, come to our temple. You just have to do kirtan out of the temple, have to come out and come over to our temple.
Is this the temple that they won't allow the devotees?
They don't allow the devotees with light skin. A lot of our black body devotees have gone in. Some devotees have snuck in, wearing saris and stuff. They're the last temple in India that doesn't let us in. Because there was before a whole political thing about the government tried to force people in there, so they become very defensive about people coming in. During Gandhi's movement, he wanted to have all the street sweepers go in the temple. So because of that, they become so defensive that even though most of their one of the sons is my disciple, son of the secretary
of the committee for that temple is a bhakti. Once I've initiated, I go back to India. And this is in the Calcutta temple. It's just that because of this whole political thing that they had from before, and because the official saint of that temple is the Shankaracharya Puri, who is a renegade. All the other three Shankaracharyas in India also certify Krishna conscious devotees, but this one is a diehard. He doesn't like the movement for some reason. He's a very heavy Mayavadi, Shankaracharya. So between the two, there's just enough pressure that no one takes the initiative to actually do the red tape to let us go in the temple. Otherwise, it's the only temple I can think of. Any, they don't let us go in. But our devotees, I just send my Indian disciples in, and they buy the prasadam, and I go there for dessert. We'll build a big. If they don't let us in, by the time we finish our Mayapur temple, we'll build a big temple there, and Jagannath will come to us. But they have 3,000 pujaris, so if we want to do the puja, we have to have quite a few. 3,000 pujaris. It's a very big complex. Yes?
Why is he worshipping Lord Jagannath?
He doesn't worship Jagannath. He doesn't live in the temple. He's got a separate ashram. But the brahmanas for the temple are hereditary brahmanas for thousands of years. And when Shankaracharya, the original Adi Shankaracharya, preached in India, at one point he drove out Buddhism from India, and he was the topmost preacher for some period of time. At that time, the Shankaracharya in Puri was given some kind of a position as like the official sannyasi advisor of the temple. He has his own separate ashram. So they are very much in tradition there. The king, since thousands of years, the king of Orissa, Gajapati, has always been the president of the Mukti Mandap, or the head of the temple. So when they have that ceremony, the king, although kings have been abolished in India, but still, whoever is the hereditary king now, even after independence, he comes up in his elephant, and he gets down with a golden broom, he sweeps the road in front of Jagannath. Then after that, after he sweeps the road, then they start the Rath Yatra. Without him sweeping, they won't start the Rath Yatra. So they have all these traditions and all these things. So it's not that Shankaracharya worships Jagannath. He worships Radha Krishna, but he's a complete Mayavadi. I challenged them, you're worshiping Radha Krishna. Prabhupada told me that these Mayavadis, they're actually bogus. I mean, in the sense that Mayavada is so, impersonal philosophy is so dry that they can't help. And one of them personally told Prabhupada that my business is I'm a Mayavadi sannyasi, so I have to preach Mayavadi. But actually, I'm very attached to worshipping Radha Krishna. It's just like, you know, it's a business for them. They got into the wrong line, but they got all their followers and all that, and they're too attached to go into another line and risk, you know, starting all over again. But some of them are actually attached to Radha Krishna. So he has the Radha Krishna deity. I said, you're worshipping Radha Krishna. And he said, no. He said, I'm worshipping myself. So I am Radha Krishna. So then I couldn't help but call him, you know, a few names, and then leave, you know. Too offensive, but these people are, that's why you can't listen to Mayavadis. They have all this poison philosophy.
And they just lazy limitations.
Pardon? All different. Some of them are sincere. It's one philosophy. Some of them are sincere Mayavadis, and some of them are lazy. Some of them are actually doing it out of hypocrisy. They actually know that Vaishnavism is better. I heard from some people before that Maharishi told some of his disciples that they should join Bhaktivedanta Swami if they wanted to learn Bhakti Yoga. They wanted to actually then they kept challenging and he couldn't satisfy him. He said, better go to him. They appreciate very much, except for that one Shankaracharya, all the other ones appreciate very much, even though they're Maya bodies that we're, what we're preaching. They believe in everything we do, up to reincarnation, up to the absolute truth. It's just that they don't believe in Krishna's personality as spiritual. They don't understand that. They don't know how to explain Krishna. They don't have any definition for Krishna. So in terms of the karmis, we have much, you know, compared to the karmis, we have karma. When we get to our own philosophical discussion, then we have a lot to discuss about. We have a lot of difference. So right now there's so many opposing elements in India. The Mohammedans are going and converting the tribal people and the Hindus outcast into Mohammedans and this and that. So there's many common ground that the Mayavadis are approaching us. On the common grounds that we have to use us to preach and spread Harinam, because they have all these caste traditions which stop them from preaching to the people. It makes them much more rigid in there. But what we, Lord Chaitanya, is when we go to the masses, we go to the people, and we spread Harinam. So they're requesting us to take up the preaching, because when they do it, people don't believe them, because they've been so bigoted for so long. They've supported hereditary caste system for so long. But now, when they're revolting against that system, if when they go out, they think it's just some motivated political thing. Then why are you coming out now, after you've been supporting the system for so long? They know it must be some political thing. But because all along we've been embracing everybody if they take up chanting Hare Krishna. Therefore, there's a magazine, I think they published, Who Will Save Hinduism? I think they published it in the World Review. Any questions? Well, we don't have much to do with them. They're pretty ineffectual nowadays. Prabhupada called those people that judge a devotee by what skin he is as tanners, shoemakers, because they're not seeing the soul, they're seeing the skin. So the people that make shoes, they're expert whether it's skin, height is good, you know, whether it can be made into a bag or a shoe. So he called them as cobblers. They're judging a person by what skin he is, not seeing the actual person, his soul, his heart. We just did a big program in Jagannath Puri outside the temple, and some of the people from the temple came in and lectured. I think that within some time you'll have a change of heart. Last year we had over 1 million people. 9 kilometers, 6 mile long, not yet to route. The whole route was just packed with people.
I've heard it said that if you pull on the road and lower some car, it's not tough to go like you got it. Is that true?
Yes.
Krishna Balaram Mandir, they were distributing this year at the festival. Some of the devotees brought back about the places of pilgrimage in Vrindavan and stories about that. Printed by Krishna Balaram Mandir. Do you know about that book? I wonder if the stories are qualified enough. If you didn't know about it, and if the Nuga Maharaj didn't know about that same thing. I wouldn't want to use a story. It says put out by Krishna Balaram Mandir. He never saw it. I thought you knew about it or had
I don't know many of the stories in Vrindavan.
Some of the stories may be from the Puranas and some from the Goswamis, and some are what the local pujaris think.
So I thought the GBC was itself in Srila
Prabhupada. It's not an official BBT publication.
We're probably the best at going. These could be proper books, something that you're not quite sure about. Right?
Yes.
If you said this kind of approved story or something, I would consider using that sometimes.
I haven't seen the book.
Right.
I'm sure that it's like Robert said in his purport sometimes that local pujaris say this.
Yeah, you might say it is said.
Yeah. It is said. You can't take those stories as being authoritative in terms of complete accuracy unless you know the exact source of the story.
Right. Even a prophet says, like, it is said that this deity does this, and a certain tiger said that these two birds are come every day and take them for shaman.
One of our devotees went and saw those two birds.
Uh-huh.
In South India. So they look, they're amazing. They fly right in and eat out right out of the pujari's hand. And look around at the people. And so they look amazingly intelligent. And look at the people, take a little food, just the respect to prasad, and they fly off. Those are the two demigods that were cursed. Come every day, take the prasad.
The before they were.
Thousands of people go to see those birds every day. Then the pujari gives the bird mahaprasad to the people. Actually, everything we need to know is in Srila Prabhupada's books. These are all very interesting, but actually the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam are what we actually need to know. How was thank your time today?
It seemed like Krishna was testing me all day.
Rainy day?
Yeah, or... I don't know if they evaluated Krishna or Mama. It's raining a little bit. And so, should I stay here at this shelter? Or I think I could be better over here, but it might be better here. I don't have any sound. I didn't have a coat, I didn't have a hat. So I stayed at the shelter and I worked. I said, I'm not going to do good here. Before I left, where I thought I was going to do good. And it just, so I was back to the shelter and all this time found me back to the forest.
Shelter? Bomb shelter?
I thought it's in Chicago they call it a bylock. What's it called here?
Bus terminal?
Oh, yeah. A golden pad. And I could stand over there and see all the cars coming and I can just think of something. But at the end of the day, I didn't get much laughing, but the people were nice. It was this far up there. I was meeting nice people. And I had the book all wrapped up in plastic in my arm.
When you have books wrapped in plastic, does that work in America?
In the rain? Oh.
And then we quit all the books in plastic and just show them one book and then and we tear off the plastic and sign them. Probably if you took off the plastic, the person really could.
Who signed it? I signed the book. The primary. Another way to get people to not keep that run off. Try to run off the book. I don't know, sign it. When you sign it, then it keeps them from running away so fast. And then they kind of think, some people think you wrote it. And then you just ask for a donation then. It's kind of personal. They like it. They have good things. We've been going a lot to people in the city because the city's been at first it got all we distributed so much around here that barely anybody wanted to see us anymore. But then we did so many different kinds of travel in Sankirtan and everybody here is pretty much ready to get a book now. It's pretty fresh around here. Although it's not real great and big. They don't have that much money. Still, they don't even, they're not really that familiar with us. Especially in black community. It's, in the world, it's mostly black now. They always take our book and they like it pretty much.
Some people comment that the books are hard to understand. Is that still there?
Sure. They're hard to understand. They can't understand. They can only, it's so hard for them to understand if they don't read them. But some of the books are really nice, like the John Lennon book. Anybody who gets that book reads it. And I don't have basic books. I like to give every book to BGG. Because the BGGs you can understand. At least some of the stories. Well, they can't. They're so hard to understand. They can't understand it because they don't want to read it. But if they ever have gotten a John Lennon book, they always tell me that they. Oh, I read it. Now, did you read? I asked if they got other book. Did you read it? No, but I'm gonna read it. But they're not gonna read it. The John Lennon book. I asked them, did you read it? But yeah, I read it. It was really interesting. Almost every person that got it read it. So I think that's a very good book for America, at least. For this country, maybe England.
Even the Science of Realization, did I read that?
Well, we have trouble selling that because of the cover. They see Srila Prabhupada, they just get a little bit afraid, you know, he's such a guru, and they're kind of afraid of the guru, I think. But, in fact, we can sell Bhagavad Gita, but selling Science of Realization. Cut yourself more in half than in half. So we're giving those out for free, and we're probably not going to order anymore. But it's a great book, and only a certain amount of people of elevated consciousness, relatively speaking, could have an interest in it. Although it's a great book, the Bhagavad Gita is also very hard for them. I like to give out a lot of messages and John Lennon books and the Bible Jesus, although they usually don't read that. It's becoming pretty famous, Bible Jesus. We have a paperback. We haven't been distributing hardcover books for a long time. We haven't been distributing barely any books for a long time, but we're going to try and really start now. It's Temple Construction has been a big project, but we're trying to distribute a lot of books. Start again. Formal we used to do a lot. As far as the readability of the books, I know they have to be distributed, and I like to have some basic books to go along with the other ones, so that at least they'll read the magazine and maybe download a book. The other ones aren't too much readable. But they're so dense, they can't, their brain is just so bewildered, they can't even understand it.
In South America now, in Spanish, you're praying these books like Magari the Hunter.
Mm-hmm.
So the Hunter and the Saint. Agrari and Nara, just little books like that, really simple.
I think we could use more books like that in America. People read them more. I don't think they read. They haven't been reading them for years. They buy them, but they can't understand it. I like this. I know that we should distribute them, but I think if we have an introductory book like the Lilamrita, which I was reading a new Discount World Review, how they distributed so many of those, they made in paperback. That's a very beautiful book also, and I think that if we distributed a lot of those, and the people would read the other books after they read that one. They need some better introductions, I think, in a very basic, I mean, they can't understand the little basic books that we have. They can't understand that. But some of the books are good, like the Lilamrita and the John Lennon book are very readable. And I find people read those more than talking to the people who have bought them. Because I used to sell the Lilamrita too, and they read that one also. Not as much as John Lennon book. We could print some of those books and get more. They read the other ones after they got an introduction. That's why I always like to get a magazine. Although most of the big book distributors, since I've been distributing books, they don't want it. Give them a magazine too, because they don't want them to know that it was Hare Krishna. Until a long time after they got away with the book, and then because it might come back for the money or something. But I like to give them a magazine. And then, because then they can really get a basic understanding.
What about the Who Are We?
I saw that. That's about the same as the DPG, according to me. I didn't see the necessity of it in America, although it's not as many books as we get, it's great. I thought it was pretty informative. DPG did a pretty good job, I think. And other things. Welcome. I'd like to give everything. More basically.
I'm losing an hour of sleep. Anybody bring up a drum roll?
No. We could always look at the worry about.
Disturbing the neighbors?
Well, we have a little problem right now. Especially the person that lived down here.
So some Chandler?
Well, he was a little bit concerned about it. And we were kind of worried about bringing him down a little bit too. Because there's a petition going on in the neighborhood right now about us, and kind of weird that we're kind of problems. We're getting a lot of devotees coming here now. I think some of the people that really don't like us very much are getting a little bit lines in there. Most of them pretty much like us. It's just that I think a couple of them want to live downstairs here, and another one lives down that street. They're trying to make some complaints. All the rooms are moving everywhere, all the household, there's a lot of household at this point, and they have children also. And sort of like taking over the neighborhood. We get kind of afraid. I
You vote when the election comes?
Yes. We don't vote, but I told the mayor to vote. We know the mayor was in the airport all the time. We don't actually vote, I told him we're all going to vote for him. Because he just was running for election, I saw him. And I've been myself calling him. We meet all the people at the airport, all local officials.
But you know, they can know if you vote or not.
They'll actually, I don't think he's going to investigate it, but we didn't
know. No, but I'm sure the local, when it gets right down to the local party in the neighborhood, they'll know who votes and who doesn't vote.
All right.
And if you vote, then they respect you a lot more. They don't want to lose your vote.
I told him we were going to vote, he changed his, he used to put us off with, but I told him, you know, we're going to vote, we got a lot of influence, we got a whole bunch of people living there, we have a lot of friends. We're going to invite him to a Rafiaka, because he came kind of favorable when I told him that, and he had changed his, started really talking, you know, took our book and really liked it. We haven't actually voted yet.
In New Vrindavan, they vote, they make or break the guy. In that part of the country, they got 250 votes, it's only 300 people. 500 people, they got like 55% of the vote, and every Hare Krishna votes, you can never get all the karmis to vote. So the commissioner is always coming around there, you know. You can send a vote for them, you know, anything they want.
Really powerful.
Yeah, if you have a whole block, and you know, they know that everyone, you know, they all vote one way.
Yeah, I think we should take it out. Rikadar has a friend. He knows a lot of people. I got in trouble the other day, arrested, and they were causing me all kinds of problems. And I told them I wanted to see the chief because it was an unjust arrest. They were making a joke. They brought in some old man, and they go, "Here's the chief." But, you know, I go, "That's not the chief." Finally, the chief, the actual chief, was Rikadar's cousin. And even though he's a young man, he just got me out, no bail or anything. And I was there causing all kinds of problems. But the chief just let me right out. And the mayor in Kenner, I think he's going to be the mayor. It's with the airport, that town near, it's right in the big suburb. And one of Rikadar's best friends in school. And Rikadar also knows a lot of other people from around here, his friends. And everywhere I go, I always meet someone, you know, okay? A lot of his friends are going to politics. He's actually been working with some of them.